Off the Ball Rugby.
I had him in my original, if you remember, Colin. I had him as my starting 10 for the tour.
Yeah, but you were also in a stadium and that's changed. So, like, what do you think now?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
We're going to turn our attention to the Lions. A routine first test victory. Matt Williams is with us. Matt, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Jay. Good morning, Colin. Really good, mate.
What were your key takeaways from the Australian side in the aftermath of that game?
First of all, mate, I think the Cork boys need to just ring Leo Cullen and they'll get some answers on failing at a few games. And mate, my grandmother's from Nina. You know, everyone bagged them all during the week. It was and they stood up. I was just hoping the Wallabies would do the same thing. They got bagged all week, and unfortunately, they couldn't. But the Lions in that first really 45, but probably the first 25 minutes, just played at a tempo and a pace that the Wallabies couldn't live with. Unfortunately, you know, if you're supporting the gold team, we were hoping. But when you, I didn't think Joe got his selection right. And when there were those injuries, you know, to Rob Valentini, Will Skelton didn't make it. We obviously, you know, young Liner was his first run on test. It didn't look good. You know, things didn't good look. And as it turns out, you know, my opinion, they got their hooker wrong. The line out fell apart. That's from the Australian point of view. You know, they were brave. They came back in the second half. Courage is not the issue with this Australian side, but you know, the Lions, as I said, the tempo, look at the stats, the go forward stats just before half time. The Wallabies had carried the ball forward 70 metres, and the Lions, I think it was 279, 278. And that's just a reflection of that whole game. The territory, the Lions kick well. The territory stats were just damning there at about the 30 minute mark. You know, it was a staggering territory and possession dominated by the Lions. And the Wallabies contributed to that. You know, the penalties ended up 7-11. I thought the referee was pretty harsh on the Wallabies, but you know, you can't give a quality team five more possessions from penalties. And, of course, the penalty kicks, even though it turned out to be three tries each, but the penalty kicks were the determining factor in the end. But if Australia had got near them, you would have said it was an injustice. The Lions were far too good.
I actually am quite positive on behalf of Australia, Matt. I have Australian cousins, like born and bred over there, so I was chatting away to them during the game. And I was thinking, it is quite remarkable that, you know, they had a host of injuries, Rob Valentini and Will Skelton added to that list, and they only played one warm-up game, which was only a 3-point victory against Fiji. And beyond that, you have to go back to last November against Ireland for their last game collectively. Now, of course, these players are match fit themselves, but as a collective, they don't really know each other that well at the moment.
Yeah.
And I thought after the Dan Sheehan try in the second half, it had a lot to do with maybe the Lions dropping their intensity, but I thought Australia were pretty decent for the last 35 minutes.
Yeah, Colin, people were saying, the Wallabies have got to do them in the first test. I just don't understand the logic for that. If you're saying the Lions are going to get better on tour because they have all these lead-up games, why wouldn't the Wallabies get better after a hit-out? And I think you're really accurate. I think the Wallabies will be a much better team next week for that performance. And interestingly, as Brisbane's been a very happy hunting ground for Australian teams over the years, and I was amazed at the stat that they've never beaten the Lions in Brisbane, because that's usually where the first test is Brisbane. You know, traditionally it was Brisbane for one, Sydney for two. Now it goes Sydney, Melbourne, because Melbourne have just got such massive stadiums. You know, the Melbourne Cricket Ground, where the game we played on Saturday, you know, I think it'll break the world record. It'll go pretty close to it anyway. You know, minimum 90,000 at the MCG. But then, you know, by the time they get to that and to Sydney, that the Wallabies should be playing better, especially we're getting the reports that Rob Valentini will be back. Now, for everyone in Ireland, he's won the John Eales medal 2 years in a row for the best Australian player of that season. He's a great ball carrier. He's a great personality in the line-out. Big man. Gives the team a lot of confidence. Great defender, punishing defender. So I think with him back and Skelton on the bench, and I think they'll also start Angus Bell off the bench. Start him rather than put him on the bench, because he's a great ball carrier. I'd have Belly there for sure. And I also think they'll start Tate McDermott at nine. And I'll be interested to see what they do around the hookers, because I thought the line out was where the Wallabies lost the game without doubt. That their line out was very poor, and you know that killer, and Jared will be laughing at me because I think for all the years I've always said the championship minutes, the scores just before and just after halftime, for whatever reason, have a massive impact on momentum. And Dan Sheen's try at the 44-minute mark, where the Wallabies lost their own line-out. That was where the possession came from. Game was so hard for the Wallabies then, you know. At 17-5 at halftime. If the Wallabies score next year, you're right in it. But then at 24-5, that was a long, long way back.
Can we talk about Joe and the fact that he did end up playing a 10 who hadn't had game time, and that there was a sense of the team being somewhat undercooked for the first test? Given that this has been the whole focus for the last year, why did that happen?
It's a very good question, but we also have to remember that there are windows put in by the international board. So like New Zealand and France played that, you know, they've had their three test series. The Italians played, the South Africans. So it's not like we can just say, okay, we're coming out, we'll play five tests during May. It's not as easy as that. And if we think back, the same was the same for the New Zealand and South Africa when the Lions toured there. It's just the way it goes. I'm sure the Wallabies would have liked three or four games, like the Lions, you know, the preparation the Lions got. But it's not possible. Plus you have a commitment to Super Rugby, where the final of Super Rugby, the Australian team can't be playing, or they can't plan to play off there where the Brumbies were in the week before. What do they do? So I don't think it's quite as black and white as that. But there's no doubt the Wallabies are undercooked. No one's doubting that. There was another one where the Lions didn't want to play an Australia A side. That would have given the Wallabies, which is traditional. If you look back on the other tours, Australia A has played the last two Lions tours, like New Zealand play the Maori, and there's been some New Zealand selections there when they tour over there. South Africa A played the Lions in the series in 97. But the Lions learn from these things. They don't want it because that gives Australia an advantage, or aids Australia rather than an advantage. So there's a whole lot of things gone into that, Jared. Interesting point. And let's do conspiracy theories. Well, it's pretty much no doubt that the Lions had the Wallabies line out cracked. They knew the calls. There's three occasions where they definitely had either read it or knew or had cracked the code. I think people might remember, I've got it written down here, at the 52nd minute mark, the Wallabies did a play around the front of the line out. Tyke Byrne is second last in the line out, walks right along the line out into the 5 metre channel, makes the tackle, holds the player up. It's considered a maul by the referee, turnover Lions ball. Curry, in leading up to the try by Dan Sheen, steals the ball from the back of the line out, a long overthrow. And there's three or four occasions, you remember they stole the ball at two, they had the code cracked. So that let the Wallabies down. I'm not suggesting that's anything bad. That's fantastic by the Lions. Well done. Good tactics. But the Wallabies will have to go away and rethink that, because the only hope they had was to get parity at set play. Now, the scrum was very good. They actually came out of it. The Wallabies came out on top in the scrums because the Lions were so eager to get them, they gave away a lot of silly penalties or free kicks. But the line-out was a complete train smash. And two of the Lions' tries came from either errors at the line-out or one pass off the line-out, first Lions try, or the possession came from a Wallaby throw. So that also tells you the cohesion that the Lions have from being on tour. How they, you know, that we could have a conspiracy theory. Look, in the old days, I'm telling you, we all used to spy on each other. There's no two ways about that. We did it. It happened. You know, we used to have guys hiding in bushes. We had cameras in lunch packs. We had people walking their dog with a camera in the bag. Everything was on the table. And at about a certain point, everyone said, listen, hey, we all got to stop. This is ridiculous. And I'm not suggesting the Lions did anything wrong, but they certainly had the Wallaby line out calls completely and utterly broken.
Pardon the potentially naive question here, Matt, but why are Australia so undercooked when they knew this tour was coming for a long time?
Yeah, mate, as you said to Jer, well, you've got to go back a bit, like, because we've had 20 years of utter mismanagement of our game in Australia, and you only have to look, it's 2 years since the World Cup. Look what we were on the, I was on the show with Jer in the November series prior to the World Cup, and Dave Rennie's coaching aside, the Wallabies played magnificently against France. They put in a seconds team against Italy and lost by a point. They should have won that game, lost by a point. And then they come to Dublin and lose just. So they sacked the coach.
That was mad.
6 months out. It was madness.
The team were playing such beautiful rugby.
Yeah,
and it was like proper old school. It was like watching the Ellis and Campese's team. You're like, wow, this is amazing. They're back.
And they're playing, you're 100% correct. And they put Eddie Jones in. So Eddie Jones sacks everyone in the side, completely changes his staff, doesn't pick Michael Hooper. We go to the World Cup. It's a disaster. They get injuries. It's a train smash. We then sack Eddie and we start again. So we've really lost 2 years of preparation. You look at, consider New Zealand or Ireland, you know, look at how the succession plans of the coaching staff in Ireland is, from Joe Schmidt to Farrell, you know, now it looks like it used to be. And then you also put it down, Colin, we've got a real weakness at 10. They don't know who their good 10 is. And they've desperately been searching for it. And they've said, okay, we're going to go with Noah Lolasio. Noah is an average player. He's a good kid, tries his heart. And I'm not questioning the courage of any of these young men. I'm not questioning their effort or their commitment to the jersey. They are 100% committed. But Noah wouldn't get into any Irish province as a 10. He then gets injured and put out of the series against Fiji. And so they've got to bring someone else in. That we've got, you know, Linus first run on. You've got, you know, the lack of depth and understanding and preparation for our tens goes back years. You know, with Pete Samu coming back in to the side. Well, Pete Samu should be in this test side. And there's a bit of a I don't know if you've heard it. Pete Samu, who was a fantastic six, played for Bordeaux for 2 years, just re-signed with the Waratahs, has come home. He's supposed to play tomorrow night for the Indigenous and combined Indigenous and Pacifica team. And we believe the Lions have objected to his selection, and he has been stood down from the side, which is just such poor form from the Lions. And look, the Lions on tour, they're winning and they're going to come away with a series, in my opinion. They have not covered themselves in glory. They have been really poor tourists on this tour. And it just, like, this is a Tuesday game, means nothing. They're going to win the game anyway. This team's been put together in 3 days. And to object to a player playing, and it would have been a great, you know, for this guy, what a wonderful life experience.
Yeah.
And the only reason you can think is they know Samu's a good player and they don't want him there for the third test. That's the only possible explanation you can come up with. And it's just a completely unnecessary lack of sportsmanship or decency on their behalf. You know, look, I don't know if this is true because I wasn't there, but I spoke to a journo, Irish journo, who said that at the Lions training session in Perth, and I wasn't there, so I'm hearing this secondhand, all the kids were on the sideline of the school, and after training they didn't go over to the kids and take selfies and give them autographs. They got in the bus and went. Now, you know, who does that? Why would you do that? Why would you not walk over to kids and just spend 10 minutes with them? Like, and they haven't had one fan day. They're not on the Australian media. They're not on the TV tonight. I watched this Sydney. I'm in Sydney at the moment talking to you. And there wasn't one Lions face on the TV. Now, they've got a travel day and they've got a game tomorrow night. There's a lot of guys not playing. Surely they can put out some guys who aren't playing to talk to the media. We're just not getting any engagement with this Lions side for the good of the game in Australia. Now, the atmosphere at the test match on Saturday night was unbelievable, sparking. It was fantastic. And the tourists were just brilliant. They were really well behaved. People were fantastic. Don't get me wrong with that. But I just think the Lions as tourists, you know, they could just go a little bit more. You know, the game here is teetering. Surely you can put rugby first just for a little bit each week, just for an hour. It's really sad. You know, I think in hindsight, when at the end of this tour, and the Lions, I think they'll win the tour. I think when there's some honest evaluation of how this team has presented itself to the Australian people, I think there's going to be some deep thinking about the next one and how they do it. They've got to be a lot more thoughtful of the local community, as we all did. as we did, all my experiences when you go away was you were thoughtful and you're an ambassador, and I just find that really hard to comprehend.
And you've written strongly on this very topic in last Friday's Irish Times, the day before the first test. Charmless Lions have put on a masterclass in how not to win friends since landing in Australia, and outside of player objection and players not signing autographs or stopping for selfies, is there anything else in that piece that you'd like to talk about now? Because I found it a very intriguing article.
Thanks, Colm. Look, I'm sort of at that age where I don't really care what people think anymore, you know. So I just want to tell the truth, is that we're seeing it, that all the people are something. You know, I love coming home and to Australia, and, you know, I go to my club, I see my old friends, all rugby guys. I'm talking to some local journos. I'm talking to some rugby guys, you know, in the higher ups, and everyone's saying it, saying, why is this not happening? I think the other part, you know, obviously I found it just completely objectionable to say that the Waratahs hosed the pitch. Like, we just had 4 days of absolutely incessant rain in Sydney, like record-breaking rain, and that new stadium has had troubles with its drainage. And to accuse your opposition of cheating, and they're a thirds team, and they were a courageous team, and they tried their heart out. You know, all these little things add up. And the Lions are dominating in rugby. They're playing really positive, open rugby, like the way they played in the first half. It was not a stodgy game plan like we saw in Africa 4 years ago. It was a wonderful game plan. That was really attractive footy. You came away and you said, well, you know, that was a really entertaining game. That side of it, they're doing right. It's the off-field stuff that they could do right. And I think so much of it is because, I won't mention his name because it's a private conversation, an ex-Irish line, and I had a long talk the other day about how it seems to be just, everything from this line seems to be driven for content on their own social media platforms. And the content's quite, you know, well, it's not my cup of tea, let me put it that way. But rather than saying, what can we give to the Australian community? We don't have to give them much, just give us a little bit. But rather than do that, we'll give a lot to our content so we can drive it back in the four countries at home. And I just think there needs to be a balance, and I think it's way, way out of balance right now. Like, which schools, you know, what have they, where have they gone to talk to these kids? What clinics have they run? Have they done anything? I know Lee Halfpenny. I got a young nephew up in Queensland, and Lee Halfpenny was at his school doing some coaching. He's only a little 8-year-old kid, you know. And that's fantastic. Now, Lee's obviously an ex-line. Why couldn't the Lions, the guys who aren't playing, just go somewhere for an hour and bring the cameras? Anyone go, geez, that's fantastic. They're putting it back into the community. Because here the game is so close to dying. But this is where the Lions are so good. The financial injection has been phenomenal. Mm. It saved us. But there's so many other things. And it's not – if we're reduced – if our game is reduced to just the scores of a Lions tour, especially a Lions tour, because they're so unique. They're unique to our game. Four countries coming together. It's touching back to the old days. The Saturday-Wednesday thing is the old days. It's the amateur days where there was an ethos about it. And I think that – and I don't think – I know Andy Farrell's a great person. I don't think there's anything malicious in this, but I think it's something they've neglected, is the ethos of giving. There's other things to a Lions tour besides booting the crap out of the locals. You know, there is another thing. And I think in their evaluation, they'll look back and say they got that wrong. I hope they do, and they get it right for the next ones.
On the pitch for the second test, Matt, would you change anything in the starting team for the Lions? Joe McCarthy went off injured to start the second half for Ollie Chessam. Looks like Tom Curry, who was fantastic, is carrying a knock. So fitness dependent, if everyone is available this coming Saturday for the second test, would you leave it as is, or would you make any changes particularly?
I think if I look at it, come through Andy Farrell's, what we know of Andy, you know, did you notice all the kids on the field at full time, the whole family thing, you know, which he's done with the Irish side, and I really admire. And, you know, Jamison Gibson-Park was doing an interview for Australian TV, and his young bloke was coming up and jumping all over. It was good. It was great. You know, it was really – so he's trying to get that – inclusive feel that he gets so well with Ireland. I actually think he'll then change the team, because this is the difference between Curry and Josh Vanderfleur or Jack Morgan. Like all three of them have played magnificent footy, and I think he'll give one of them. I think he'll change Curry. Anyone that's got a knock, we'll get a rest. I think he'll change the sentence if Gary passes his HIA. And I look, for Gary's sake, I hope he finally gets the test cap that he deserves. And I think he'll put Bundy in at 12. And I think he'll keep combinations like he did with the Scottish three-quarter line. I would not be surprised to see Owen come on to the bench. He's starting or playing tomorrow night. Be interesting to see where he goes for Smith on the bench. And I also think there might be some changes in the way he organised his front row. Todd Boone was magnificent at six. He hadn't played well at six on 20. He was magnificent. Has he got enough juice left in him? And this is what Farrell does really well, and these tours are so good at. They put out the guys who are absolutely frothing at the top to get on. So, you know, if the guys are carrying an injury, they're a bit tired, their energy's down because it was, you know, a lot of running in that game. The meters were huge. I think he will make those changes. But obviously, with a winning team, it won't be. Jamison Gibson Park was great. The front row was really good. He might give Genge time back on the bench and put Porter and start Porter. Ty Furlong played really well, ball in hand. You watch that first try. His pass was magnificent. But he hasn't played a high minutes for a long time. Do you swap them round? I think they're questions that we might know, but I do think there will be some changes to that line side, and not for any. Well, I hope Joe McCarthy's fit, but not for any bad reasons. I just think he's going to bring fresh legs in.
All right, great stuff, Matt. Thanks a million for joining us as ever. Cheers.
Great to see you guys.
See you.
Nice. Matt Williams giving us really interesting stuff from the Australian side of things. They do need all those players back, and even then, it might not be enough for them to win the test. But they kind of need to win the test to justify this trip. Matt's point about the money that Australia have made off this, like the money, it seems, is way more for Australia than it is for the other tests or the other places. So that's probably why they will remain part of the 12-year cycle.
The Lions have named their team for tomorrow's warm-up game too. So there's three Irish starting. You have Jamie Osborne playing outside centre. Inside centre is Owen Farrell, who's captaining the side. And Finlay Beelam and Josh van der Fleer also start among the forwards. Halfbacks are Ben White and Finn Smith. Van der Merwe, Darcy Graham on the other side from Van der Merwe. Blair Kinghorn, fullback. Schumann George, Beelam front row. James Ryan, I forgot their starts as well, with Scott Cummings. And then Jack Morgan and Henry Pollock see out the team.
It's a good team.
Yeah, it's very strong.
It is a good team. You'd be fairly disappointed if you're starting, wouldn't you? You're like,
I think so. It's a bit of a nail in your second test coffin. Yeah, four Irish starters and all.
To listen to all of our rugby coverage, become a member by signing up at offtheball.com/join now.